Welcome to the Claudio Relsano Show on claudiorelsano.com, brought to you by Aspire Pediatric Therapy and Roscoe Hearing and Allergy Care Center. Claudio will be speaking to sports legends from the 70s, 80s, and 90s about their careers, business, and what they're doing now. He will also hold roundtable discussions with some old friends about trending topics in the world of sports. And now, here's Claudio.
Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to the Claudio Relsano Show, brought to you by Roscoe Hearing and Allergy Care Center and Aspire Pediatric Therapy. As always, I want to thank Rick Mitchell for the introductions and my fantastic producer, Adam Zaloof, who's getting a nice fan base. I check some of the emails, and everybody's asking about Adam, so we got to get him on the show one of these days. But today's guest, I'm lucky to call him a friend. He's a great guy. He was the number one draft pick for the Cincinnati Reds back in 1965, ahead of Johnny Bench. Had a 12-year career in the majors playing for the Reds, Cardinals, Boston Red Sox, Cleveland, Milwaukee Brewers, and the Pittsburgh Pirates. He had a very famous and very important pitch hit home run in 1975 in the World Series against the Cincinnati Reds that gets played all the time. So welcome my friend Bernie Carbo. Bernie, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you very much. I'm excited.
All right, brother. Well, you know what? Tell us about growing up in Detroit. Tell us about your goals, your dreams, and your life in Detroit as a young man.
Well, you know, I started off at 11 years old playing Little League. My dad gave me a bucket of balls, and he moved over in Livonia on Ann Arbor Trail in Inkster by Edward Hines Park. We had a baseball. You know, he just wanted me to go outside and play. We played basketball, football. We played all the sports, hockey. But, you know, we always played down in the park from morning to night, and we played ball. And then I started playing Little League when I was 11 years old. And then I went to Babe Ruth at 13. Then I went into Detroit to play Federation. And I started playing with older kids. I was 15 years old playing for, you know, kids that were first year in college that were, you know, 18 and 19 years old, and playing for Modern Home Hardcomb. And then I went to Westside Cubs. And John Mayberry, myself, and Tom Ragland got signed, and we went to the big leagues together. But I tell you what, I was a left-handed hitter, throwing right-handed, and I was a shortstop, caught a little bit, pitched a little bit, and played a little bit of outfield, but whatever. But I went to high school and played varsity high school, but never went to college. And at 17 years old, in 1965 was the first year of the draft, and that was the 16th pick, number one draft choice for the Cincinnati Reds. But Detroit had a lot of great ballplayers. Ted Simmons, who got inducted to the Hall of Fame, Willie Horton, John Mayberry, and, of course, a lot of great ballplayers came out of Detroit. I'm living in Mobile, Alabama. We have the great Hank Aaron, Willie McCovey, Ozzie Smith, Amos Otis, and so on and so on. So, you know, it's an interesting time where I'm working with kids today, and they don't know how to pick up play teams. They don't know how you throw a bag of balls out there and say, pick up teams and play. They don't know how to umpire, keep score, pick up teams, and just play baseball and have fun. Everything has to be organized, and, you know, all this baseball they play, travel ball, and a lot of them playing school ball and whatever, but they just don't go outside and play. You know, they don't, everything has to be organized. We were talking about that the other day, but it's a fun game to play. It's the greatest game ever played, baseball. So I love baseball.
Right, right. Now, and we're definitely going to try to get into the game today and your thoughts on it, but you had a great rookie season. In 1970, you had 21 home runs, batted .310, and you made it to the World Series. Talk about that first year, and talk about the Cincinnati Reds of that era. Early, I guess, Big Red Machine.
Yeah, the Big Red Machine. We had Bobby Tolan. We had Lee May, you know, Tony Perez. We had Johnny Bench, Pete Rose. We just had a great hitting team, and you know, I had a great year. I hit .310. I was fifth highest batting average. I was 21 home runs, rookie of the year. And I got together with Marvin Miller, and I wasn't negotiating a contract with Cincinnati. They weren't offering. The minimum salary was $10,000. The minimum went to $12,000, and they were offering me $15,000. And I went to Marvin Miller, and I saw that Billy Cagliari for the Boston Red Sox was getting $32,000. I signed for $30,000 when I was 17. So I told Marvin Miller that they weren't offering me any money, and I wanted to go to court, and I wanted to go play wherever I wanted to play. My dad could work wherever he wanted to work. But they had Kurt Flood, he said. We don't, right. You know, we got Kurt Flood's going to go to court, but we don't want to go to court with you because you're too young, you're a rookie, and everything like that. And what eventually ended up happening, I'm missing all the spring training. There's about maybe 10 days left, and Bob Hausman's GM calls me into the office, and he says, you need to sign your contract. I'm asking for $30,000. He gave me $30,000 when I'm 17. I'm in the big leagues, playing the World Series, you know. He had a great year, rookie of the year. He says, look, you can go home and carry a lunch bucket like your dad. And I went, what? I wanted to be a big league ball player all my life. You know, I would like to make a little bit of money now, okay? He said, you heard what I said, carry a lunch bucket like your dad. And I looked at him, I said, you're not understanding me, are you? And he said, I'm not going to tell you again. And when he said, carry a lunch bucket like your dad, I pulled him across the desk, and he didn't feel too good after I left him laying on the floor.
Really?
And, yeah. And Marvin Miller, I called him up. He says, too late. You're just going to have to sign your contract and go to spring training. I said, I'm gonna get buried here. I mean, you don't understand what's going on here. So I went to spring training, didn't play. And they managed me in a different kind of a way to manage someone who did something they should have never done. As a kid, I didn't realize. I grew up in Detroit, you know, you draw a circle, you get in the middle of it, and you fight, and you get knocked out of the circle. You don't think too much of it. So I never thought too much of it until years later when a guy was writing a book. He said, I interviewed Bob Hausman, and he doesn't speak too highly of you.
Well, I certainly understand your point, though.
Yeah, I made a big mistake there. You know, it cost me. I got traded to the St. Louis Cardinals for Joe Haig. And the next year, I hit about 210. I can't even remember what I batted, but it was in the low 200s. I had, I think, maybe 5 home runs. I had a terrible year. Didn't have any spring training. When I went to spring training, I didn't play, didn't bat. Then when I got into the first month, they wanted to send me down to AAA. And I knew if I went down to the minor leagues, I'd never get back to the big leagues. So I told them I wasn't going down to the minor leagues. And then finally, I stayed there the whole year. The next year, they held me out of spring training again. And I got traded to the Cardinals in May. So when I was 21 years old, I'm rookie of the year. I don't have any spring training. I'm 22nd, 23rd, 24 years old. I'm not having any spring training. So it was very difficult for me after my rookie year to get back in the groove of things. But finally, I went to the Cardinals, had spring training, had a good year. Then I got traded to the Red Sox, and everything turned out really well.
Now, talk about the first time when you were with Boston and you met Mr. Yawkey, the owner. You told me that story in Florida, and I thought it was hilarious. But the first time you met Mr. Yawkey, what did you think and what did you tell him or ask him? Listen, what did you ask him?
Let me tell you how this all started. I got to Boston. I'm talking like a Boston, you know, Boston. I got to Boston, and I'm leading off opening day. And it's, you know, I was used to Cincinnati having 2 or 4 riders. St. Louis had 1 rider. You go to Boston, there's 100 riders in the clubhouse. I mean, they're all over the place. Mm-hmm. And they come over to my locker and say, hey, Bernie Carbo, good Italian. You're leading off opening day. And I said, no, I'm Spanish. No, a good Italian. I went, oh, okay, I'm Italian, huh? So, you know, about 10 years ago, I get this baseball card, and it's got the Italian Association out of Pennsylvania, and I'm put into the Hall of Fame, the Italian Hall of Fame.
Wow.
There's 50 of us in the box. So I call the CEO, and I say, hey, look, Bernie Carbo, that's Bernie Carbo. Bernie Carbo, man, the great Italian ball player. We're putting you in the Hall of Fame. I said, well, you know, hey, I'm Bernie Carbo, I'm Spanish. No, Bernie Carbo, Italian, and he hung up on me. So about a month later goes by, and I'm Italian, and I come in the clubhouse. You always got old people in the clubhouse working, Pete Cerrone. So I see this old guy shining his shoes. I go over to him. I give him $20. I said, hey, get me a cheeseburger and fries. I'm here early to do a little batting practice. So about 20 minutes later, Tommy, the clubhouse boy, comes over and he says, do you know who you gave that $20 to? I said, I have no idea. He says, that's Mr. Yawkey. He owns the team. So I go over to Mr. Yawkey. I said, Mr. Yawkey, man, I didn't know you were on the team, man. He says, Bernardo. He calls me Bernardo. I never get called by Bernardo other than my Sparky Anderson. Bernardo, just win the game tonight. Win the game tonight, Bernardo. I said, thanks, Mr. Yawkey, man. Thanks a lot. So I tell you what, the Boston Red Sox treated me really well. That was the first time I felt when I put the uniform on, it meant something. It meant something to me to play for Mr. Yawkey. It meant something to win Fenway Park, the fans. I love the fans, and I just love playing in Boston. I love Boston, and I said, Mr. Yawkey took my contract from $25,000 to $75,000 just like that. I thought, wow, this is really cool, man. You know, I'm not even having good years, and this guy's paying me a lot of money. And at that time, that was a lot of money. So, you know, he was a great guy. I was really sad when he died in 76 after the 75 World Series, but tremendous man, always in the clubhouse, and it was a remarkable time in Boston. I loved it.
Right. Well, I know you're still very popular in Boston, and we're going to talk about that and your famous home run after these commercial messages from our sponsors, Roscoe Hearing and Allergy Care Center, Aspire Pediatric Therapy, Dom's Pizzeria and Sports Bar at 502 Cabot Avenue in Trafford, Pennsylvania. Call Dom at 412-372-3667. And criminal defense attorney Eric Jackson Lurie, with offices located in downtown Pittsburgh and Fox Chapel. Call Eric at 412-963-9308. We're right back with Bernie Carbo.
The doctor is in. Hi, this is Dr. Roscoe. At the Roscoe Allergy Center and the Roscoe Hearing Care Center, it is important to let you know that we are going above and beyond to ensure your safety. Our staff and I are practicing all necessary guidelines to ensure safe treatment and comfort. There is no need to suffer and wait. Let us help you now to improve you or your loved one's quality of life. The Roscoe Allergy Center and the Roscoe Hearing Care Center in Dubois. Call us today, 814-375-0455. Or visit us at roscoehearing.com.
Has your child been diagnosed with an autism spectrum or developmental issue? You're not alone. Aspire Pediatric Therapy has been helping families for over 10 years and has three convenient locations. Through love, laughter, and play, the Aspire team provides occupational speech and feeding therapy using the area's only state-of-the-art sensory motor gyms. Aspire will treat you and your family like family. Don't settle for less. Call 412-474-3566 or check them out on the web at aspirepediatrictherapy.com.
We want to welcome our newest sponsor, Dom's Pizzeria and Sports Bar, 502 Cavett Avenue in Trafford, Pennsylvania. Call 412-372-3667. Dom Pecora, great guy, great food. Make sure you tell him we sent you.
Okay, Bernie, so you're with the Red Sox, and like you said, they are crazy about, the fans are crazy about the Red Sox in Boston. You guys make it to the World Series. Game six was considered perhaps the greatest World Series game ever. Talk to us about the game. Talk to us about your moment, and talk to us about what happened after your moment with Carlton Fisk.
Yeah, game six was a great game. You know, who would ever thought when we started playing, we had 3 days of rainouts. No, everybody forgot there was even a World Series to be played. Matter of fact, during game six, it was raining. We thought that game would be called off. We had a workout at Tate University, which I didn't go to work out. I stayed home. And we get to the ballpark, and I'm walking around, and I always go in these little rooms. I found this little lathe, a little hand lathe. So I took my bat, and the game started, and I started taking the varnish and everything off my bat, and Rick Wise is sitting there watching me take everything off the bat, all the varnish, all the emblems and everything off. And he says, are you paying attention to the game? I said, yeah, I'm paying attention to the game. What do I need to do? I'm not playing. I'm on the bench. So you need to pay attention. I said, what about my bat, man? How do you like it? And he said, you took all the emblems and names and everything off the bat. You took all the varnish and whatever. He said, you can't use that bat. I said, why can't I use the bat? He said, it's got to have a name and emblem and everything like that. So I went and got a magic marker, and I put Louisville Slugger on it and put Bernie Carbo, put M110, you know, and I said, I can use it now, right? So we came down to the eighth inning with a man on first and second, and Growler Eastwick was, the starting pitcher. He brought in Raleigh Eastwick, and he got the first two batters out with the man on first and second. I think Rick Burleson popped up and Dwight Evans struck out or something like that. And I came up. I was Darryl Johnson says, grab a bat and you're going to pinch hit. And I looked at Juan Benicas. I said, Sparky's going to go to Will McEnany, which is left-hander. I'm a left-handed hitter. You know, he manages by the book. So I get on the on-deck circle, and I'm thinking that he's going to go to the bullpen to get a left-handed pitcher. And he doesn't, so I'm sitting there, and the umpire says, come on, you need to hit. And I'm saying, I'm not ready to hit. I'm still looking for Sparky to come out of the dugout and change the pitch. I'm thinking Juan Benicas is going to come in and hit. So I go into the batter's box, and I'm looking at bench, and I said, John, I said, he's not going to Will McEnany. What's going on? He says, we're going to go right after you. McEnany didn't come in. You had Raleigh Eastwick pitching, and he blew a couple pitches right by me. I followed off a pitch and worked the count to a 2-2, and he threw me a cut fastball inside, and I took it right out of the bench's glove, and the umpire calls it a ball. Bench is arguing it's a strike. I dribbled it just out of his glove. I barely touched it, and I mean, Pete Rose said it looked like a little leaguer trying to learn to hit. Rico at first said it looked like a pitcher hurt his arm trying to learn to hit. And Bench is still complaining to the umpire the pitch is a strike. And after the game, he said, worst swing I ever seen a Major League Baseball player take.
Right, right.
And I step out of the box, and I'm telling you, I just felt like I just struck out. And I just I said, wow, this is bad. So the next pitch was out over the plate, and when I hit it, I saw Geronimo as I'm rounding first base turn his bat, and it's a 3-run home run, and we tied the game up, and I'm rounding second base, and I'm yelling at Pete Rose, don't you wish you were this strong? Don't you wish you were this strong? And he's yelling back, Bernie, isn't this fun? This is fun, man. This is World Series, Bernie. World Series, man. This is fun. And I get to home, and everybody's excited. And, of course, Carlton Fitz in the 12th inning hits his home run. He hits the flagpole he pulled, and he's waving it fair. And the thing about it was there was a camera. Nobody knows this. The camera was in the Green Monster, and they were talking to him. And he said, what are you going to do with the camera? Are you going to keep it on Carlton Fitz or what? And he says, well, I'll tell you what, I'm not going to be able to move the camera because I got a rat over here as big as a cat. I'll just keep it on Carlton Fitz. So when Carlton Fitz hit that ball, that's where you get the greatest shot ever of him jumping and jumping and jumping and waving the ball fair, and it's a home run, and he's all excited. So, you know, we win game six, which is the greatest game ever played. But the fact is, when I'm with Pete Rose always says to me, he says, you guys thought you were in the World Series in game six. And I told Sparky Anderson, I said, look, Sparky, we got a game seven. They think they won the World Series. We'll win the World Series, Sparky, because Pete was saying, this is the greatest game I've played. This is the greatest game. This is the greatest game. And Sparky's going to say, how can it be the greatest game when we lost? It doesn't matter. We got game seven. This is the greatest game. And, you know, talking about Pete Rose and Johnny Pinch, and I knew all those guys, and it was exciting for me to be in their clubhouse and talking to these guys and then watching them, you know, play. And I still think today that Pete Rose belongs in the Hall of Fame. I believe, you know, Tony Perez got in there, Johnny Pinch, and everything like that. But the Big Red Machine was a great team, a great organization. Sparky Anderson was a great manager. Fundamentally, they were just one of the best teams I've ever seen. But I thought that the Red Sox with Colin Strzemski, Freddie Lynn, we played that World Series without Jimmy Wright. And
right,
in the
right.
book I wrote, Saving Bernie Carbo, I wrote a book, and I put in there that losing – Jim Rice was like losing Tony Perez. So when he read the book, he comes back at me. He says, no, man, you got this all wrong. I said, what do you mean you have it all wrong? He said, it was like losing Johnny Bench, not not Tony Perez. But we lost game seven on a double play ball. We had Pete Rose at first, and Bench hits the ball short to Burleson. He flips it over to Denny Doe, and he throws it into the stands, which would have turned the double play. And Bill Lee's pitching and throws a blooper pitch to Tony Perez, and he hits it 500 feet for a home run. I come running in. I sit next to Bill Lee, and I said, Bill, we told you not to throw Tony Perez any more blooper pitches. Oh, I just wanted to see if you were telling the truth. And I said, yeah, we told you the truth. It wasn't 500 feet.
He learned the hard way.
Yeah, but we lost game seven. It broke our hearts because we really wanted to win a World Series for Mr. Yawkey.
Sure. Now, you went on to play for Milwaukee, then back to Boston and Cleveland, St. Louis, and again, and the Pirates. And before the show, I told you that I was going to talk to you about some of the players that you played with, and you said, which surprised me, you said that you were never asked about that. So let's talk about some of the guys, and we'll start off with Pete Rose.
Well, Pete Rose, you know, it's amazing when you look at Pete Rose. Very limited ability, didn't have a good arm, didn't have position, couldn't hit for a lot of power. He played third base, second base, first base, left field, and right field. Got gold gloves at every position. And one time I said to him, I said, Pete Rose, you're in a slump. He said, I've never been in a slump in my life. I said, well, you haven't gotten very many hits, man. I think you're 0 for 0 for 0 for 0 for a long time. You know what I mean? He said, Bernie, if you only needed two more hits, you'd have a great year. And I'm thinking, what are you talking about? So what I went to look at the sheet, and I went, oh, two more hits. He had 198 hits. Two more hits, he'd have a good year. And I would have a great year if I had 200 hits. But his goal for 20 years was 200 hits would give him 4,000 hits, would have him very close to beating Ty Cobb's record. And that was his goal. I never played with a ball player that hit so many line drives, never swung at a bad pitch. And he and gold glove at all those positions, hustle, run, play. You know, and, you know, when you go in the clubhouse, it says if you bet on baseball, you'll never play baseball again. It has nothing to do with the Hall of Fame. But when he went and he was suspended, 2 years after that, they put the rule in that you cannot get into the Hall of Fame. But the fact is, that was never there when we were playing ball. He should have never been in baseball again, never. But he should belong. He belongs in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, Ted Williams was trying to get Shoeless Joe Jackson into the Hall of Fame and also Pete Rose. And you got gambling in baseball now, so what's the big deal? You know what
right.
I mean?
Right.
But I would say Pete Rose and Tony Perez and Johnny Bench and Davey Concepcion belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
he was shortstop position. So when I right. look at that position, you know, I went to St. Louis and played with Bob Gibson and Lou Brock and Ted Simmons and Ted Sizemore from Detroit. He was from Detroit. I was playing against I was Cincinnati, and my first at bat, I was on the on deck circle, and Bob Gibson threw the ball at me on the deck circle.
Can you imagine that happening today?
Yeah, I went to the bench and said, Sparky, I said, that guy out there just threw the ball at me. He said, mean Bob Gibson? I said, yeah. I said, I don't think I want a bat. He said, get up there and hit. Well, he didn't throw at me. So I get traded to the Cardinals, and I get to know Bob. And I said, hey, Bob, man, you threw at me on the end, on the on-deck circle. And he said, yeah, but I missed you.
and how, you was know, it to, then, how was it to huh? play with how was it to play with Bench? Who's
Bench,
considered the greatest of
Bench,
his catcher?
Yeah. Bench and I roomed together in the minor leagues. I loved his mother and father. I just loved them. When I played, I looked to see his mom and dad, and they were always at the ballpark. He got him a place to live. And John and I today are great friends. You know, I love Johnny Bench, the greatest catcher I ever played with. A great arm, great hitter, and just a great guy. And, you know, I played with the best, you know, right there. I played with Joe Torre, too, over there. When I went to Boston, I said, okay, you look, I got Ted Williams for a hitting instructor, Bobby Doerr playing with Collier Shrimsky, two young kids, Jimmy Rice and Freddie Lynn. Dwight Evans, one of the best right fielders ever that I believe belongs in the Hall of Fame. I played with Hank Aaron in Milwaukee, And I tell you, I sat right next to him, and I think he was the greatest ball player I ever played with, Hank Aaron. Then I played with Willie Stars with Dave Parker over there in Pittsburgh. And Cleveland, who was my coach in Cleveland? Rocky Colavito.
Okay.
You know, for all you old people out there that watches baseball, Rocky Colavito got traded for Harvey King, and he's playing in Detroit. I became a great Rocky Colavito fan. So when I got there, I was like a little puppy dog. I walked up to Rocky, and you played in Detroit. I'm from Detroit. I love you, Rocky Colavito.
No, you but, definitely played with some big guys, for sure.
Yeah, and then I was in Puerto Rico when Clemente died. You know, I was playing ball there. That was a tragedy that was real. You know, Dave Parker belongs in the Hall of Fame, too. So
I agree. I agree with Pete Rose belongs and Dave Parker.
Yeah, and Dave Concepcion and a lot of other guys. So, you know, I was very fortunate that I played with a lot of great ball players. Stan Musial. I went up to Stan Musial, the greatest hitter in the National League. I said, "Hey, Stan, how do you hit that slider?" So he grabs my bat, wiggles his little butt, and says, "See it and hit it."
That's right. That's right.
Then Ted Williams, I said to him, "Teach me how to hit." He said, "See the ball, get a good pitch, and hit it hard."
You know what, Bernie? Before we go to a commercial break, and before we talk about some other things, I'm curious. We've talked about it a little bit, but you managed with Pensacola Pelicans, James Gamble, who we both love. James was the founder of the Southeastern League. And but tell us about the game. So you played, you coached. Tell us about the game today compared to when you were playing.
Well, I think when I was managing, one of the things I said when I managed that Bernie Carbo couldn't play for me, Bernie Carbo as the manager.
Right.
I lived a life that was crazy. And these kids today aren't as crazy as I was when I was playing ball. I was an alcoholic and a drug addict. Got very little sleep and whatever it may be. I played hard and lived hard. And these players today are more conditioned. They're better athletes. They're bigger, stronger. They weightlift. We weren't allowed to weightlift. You know, it's amazing today. They're great hitters. Technology has taught them to do the things that are correct. The pitching, the throwing, harder and harder and more stuff. And it's just amazing. The maple bats are unbelievable. But their condition, they take care of their lives. There's a lot of money to be made. You figure that the average salary is $3 to $4 or $5 million. Minimum salary is $1 million. Highest paid ball player making $40 million a year. And being a pitcher, you know, at one time you couldn't make any money. Now you got great pitching. They go 5 innings. You got middle relief, you know, short relief, right, left, whatever it may be. You got great fielding, great speed, bigger. You know, Pete Rose said to me, he said, "You know, Bernie, we might not even get drafted today because, you know, Pete's 5'9", I'm 5'10", and I weighed 165 pounds when I played. But the players today are great players. They're beautiful players. I mean, I watch some condition play and whatever. I think that the fact is that one of the things that I think might have caused baseball to not be as great as it was, because when we played, ball players stayed at one place and played their whole careers there. But the fact is, you know, with free agency, and I think the owners are ridiculously paying the players too much money and too long a year contracts. I would never give a pitcher more than 2 years. I would never give a player more than 2 or 3 years. They're paying a bunch of ball players that are sitting at home big bucks. But I think the contracts are outrageously too high. I think it costs too much to go to the ballpark when the ballparks were open. Family, you know, I was looking back on tickets on 1975 World Series. The box seats were like $17 to $22 sitting in the bleachers for, you know, very few dollars. I mean, you could go to the ballpark and sit in the bleachers for $1 or $2.
Right.
And, you know, parking's $50 to park your car today. It's expensive to go to the ballpark. If you're going to go to the ballpark with your family and kids, you're going to spend $300-$400. But, you know, it's I still think baseball is the greatest game ever played. You know, I think it's a great game. I just think that when I think about it, and I think fans look at it, when you're paying ball players on the average $10 to $12 million a year, and you got a high school players making $30 to $40 million a year, it doesn't resonate with the fans that the owners have just, I think that they have a great TV contract so they can spend that kind of money. You know, they got $1 billion, $2 billion, $3 billion contract, TV's contract, so they can spend that kind of money. But again, the fans are the most important. The right. Players are the players, you know, when I played, I would sit on the corner of the street there at Fenway Park and I would sign autographs to the ballpark lights went out. And I signed autographs because I like signing autographs. And I wrote my name so you could read it. And I would sign during the inner times that we were after done with taking batting practice instead of going to the clubhouse. I'd walk down the right field line and sign autographs. And I think we were more touchable, playable. We were there. We were more visible and we were approachable. But I think that right now the salaries are just outrageously where we as people, as fans, we just can't see an athlete making that much money. But the owners are making so much money, they can afford to pay it. So, you know, I guess we did a good job as a union leader and a union that we started back in 1969, 1970, when Marvin Miller came about. We weren't making any money. We weren't getting any raises. Their meal money today is more money than I made. I played 17 years and I made $476,000 my whole career. And the minimum salary is almost $1 million today. So as a union man, Marvin Miller, we have made it better for the players today. And I think that I look back and I can smile on that because we made it better for the kids to play baseball, that when they get out of the game, they don't have to go look for a job. When I played ball, when you got done playing, you had to go to work. So what I did, I went to Puerto Rico. In 3 months, they would fly me over there, pay for my house, my car, my food, and paid me more money in 3 months than I made in the big leagues. So figure that one out.
Yeah, right. All right. Well, okay. Well, we're going to take a quick commercial break to hear from our sponsors, Roscoe Hearing and Allergy Care Center, Aspire Pediatric Therapy, Dom's Pizzeria and Sports Bar in Trafford, Pennsylvania, and criminal defense attorney Eric Jackson Lurie with offices located in downtown Pittsburgh and Fox Chapel. Call Eric at 412-963-9308. We will be right back with Bernie Carbo.
Spring is here and so are spring allergies. Are you experiencing headaches, fatigue, nasal congestion, itchy watery eyes, ear pressure, or vertigo? You may have spring and summer allergies. We can help at the Roscoe Allergy Center in Dubois. We'll diagnose, treat, and get you feeling better. Allergy therapy could help eliminate these symptoms and avoid the hassles of daily medications, as well as the side effects that go along with them. We can help at the Roscoe Allergy Center.
Modern solutions with the care you've been looking for. Call Dr. Roscoe's office today, 814-375-0455.
Has your child been diagnosed with an autism spectrum or developmental issue? You're not alone. Aspire Pediatric Therapy has been helping families for over 10 years and has three convenient locations. Through love, laughter, and play, the Aspire team provides occupational speech and feeding therapy using the area's only state-of-the-art sensory motor gyms. Aspire will treat you and your family like family. Don't settle for less. Call 412-474-3566 or check them out on the web at aspirepediatrictherapy.com.
Aspire Pediatric Therapy in locations Moon Township, Pennsylvania at 993 Broadhead Road, Suite 10, and Banksville at 2893 Banksville Road, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, North Hills area, Pines Plaza Shopping Center, 1130 Perry Highway, Suite 120, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and the Punxsutawney area, 1464 North Main Street, Suite 14, Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, and the city of Pittsburgh in the north side, 1301 Beaver Avenue, Suite 10, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And remember to check out their website for all of their information at aspirepediatrictherapy.com. We want to welcome our newest sponsor, Dom's Pizzeria and Sports Bar, 502 Cavett Avenue in Trafford, Pennsylvania. Call 412-372-3667. Don Pecora, great guy, great food. Make sure you tell him we sent you.
Okay, Bernie, with all of us, we all have ups and downs in our lives. And you have been very open about the ups and of course, the downs. You know what? The floor is yours. You tell us some of the things that you went through and how you overcame them and about your life today.
Well, you know, when I was only 17 years old when I started playing baseball, and I was playing with men. And it got to be where, you know, you want to be liked and you want to be a part of the team or whatever it may be. But I ended up, by the time I was 19, I was an alcoholic. And I remember eating at a restaurant every morning. She kind of helped the minor league players at that time in Hampton, Virginia. And I was playing A-ball. And she says, you know, you're an alcoholic. And I was 19. I was, why do you say that? She says, every morning you come in here, I can smell alcohol on you. And I know that's not good for you to be drinking at your age. But it didn't matter. So when I got to the big leagues, they were giving us Dexedrine, Benzedrine, Darvon, Dapsone, codeine, and pain pills and sleeping pills. And I got hooked into marijuana. And then the next thing you know, I'm doing cocaine and everything else. And so for the rest of my career, when I'm hooked into the drugs and everything like that, and then basically couldn't play without the pills, and became very angry and bitter, and because of the contract negotiations and things like that, being traded all the time. Seemed like every time I got traded was 2 years. When they found out that I was an alcoholic drug addict, they wouldn't deal with it. They would just trade me. And one time I was playing in Boston, and I just bought a house in May. I hear a knock on the door, and a lady comes over. She says, can I buy your house? I said, buy my house? I just moved in. She said, yeah, but the paper said you just got traded. traded to the Cleveland Indians. I went, you're kidding me, right? No, it's right here in the paper. I said, oh, wow, all right. But baseball wasn't what I thought it would be. And, you know, of course, I made a lot of bad decisions. And by the time I was 32 years old, I was out of baseball. And so you go out of baseball, you know, you got to survive some way or another. So I got into more drugs and started selling drugs. And, you know, eventually my mother committed suicide. My dad died. And I went through a divorce. And I was contemplating suicide. And Bill Lee, the phone rings. You know, I pull the car in the garage, going to smoke my last joint, drink my last beer. My mother drank Roto-Rooter to die, and my dad died of a heart attack. And I was just going to take the easy way out and pull my car in the garage and go to sleep. But the phone rang. It was Bill Lee, and he never calls. And then next thing you know, Ferguson Jenkins calls me. And then Sam McDowell from Baseball Assistance calls me, and we're talking on the phone. And I was living in Winter Haven. He says, you're going to go to rehab tomorrow morning at 7:30. Can you handle it? And I said, I think I'll be all right. So I went to rehab, signed all the paperwork and everything. And then I went to the front desk and said, look, I don't have a problem. You know, I've been doing drugs for almost 28 years now. I'm 43 years old, and I don't have a problem. And there was a fight that broke out, and I had an anxiety attack. And they thought I had a heart attack, so they took me to Tampa University Hospital. They rushed me into the hospital, and next thing you know, I'm to give me a sleeping pill, and I'm in the hospital room. I'm in the room, and I fall asleep, and I wake up. I get a telephone call from rehab, and there's a man laying next to me, an older man, and he says, are you an alcoholic and a drug addict? And I'm like, wow, yeah, I guess I am. And he says, do you have a saving personality with Jesus Christ? I said, I don't know who you're talking about. I said, I felt like when I used that name in vain, I got kicked off the basketball team. So I know I can't use that name in vain, but I don't know who you're talking about, Jesus. And he told me to come sit next to him, and he gave me the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I prayed to take Christ in my life. And 3 days later, I know the Spirit of God fell on me. And I'm asking the man, I'm going back to rehab. I says, you know, I don't know your name. He said, the name of Jesus Christ is the only name you need. And he handed me a Bible. And as I was being wheeled out, I asked the nurse, I said, who is that man? And so out of over 100 beds in the Tampa University Hospital, God put me with a preacher, Baptist preacher. And when I got to rehab, what's this, a regular rehab, a guy comes to me and says he's a Christian. And I'm like, yeah, right, okay. And he says, I'm here to disciple you in the name of Jesus. And I'm like, okay. And then when I got out of rehab, Carl Schillings came over to the house. He played with the Giants in the minor leagues, and he was living in Winter Haven. He came over, and he said, we're going to start the Diamond Club Ministry to teach baseball and tell kids about Jesus Christ. So, you know, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, who should believe on him should have everlasting life, who shall not perish. So we started teaching baseball and telling kids about Jesus, and we started going all the way through New England. I went up to Maine for about 12, 15 years, Vermont, New Hampshire, Connecticut, all over New England, teaching baseball and traveling 8, 10, 12,000 miles. Started going into Ohio, Virginia, New York. And I went to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. I went to Guam. And I've been all over the country teaching baseball and telling kids about Jesus. So I've been clean now for 26 years. And I went through that divorce. And I went to a psychiatrist. I was seeing a Christian psychiatrist. And I relapsed after 14 months for about 3 weeks. And he said, you need to get on your knees and pray and find a good Christian woman. So I started praying, and I went to a place called the Anchor House where I worked with boys, and I was talking to the preacher there and told him I relapsed, and I was in my relapse. So he asked me to go to lunch. He got a telephone call, and he introduces me to this woman coming down the hallway. This is Mrs. Tammy Young. She works here at the unit, and I says, God's told me you need to be with me. And she said, God ain't told me nothing yet. So we got married 4 months later. I adopted her son, Chris. He changed his name to Bernardo Christopher Carbo Jr. Wow. He's a major in the Army. He's got a doctor's degree, works with the Rangers. And he's got 10 years in, and he's got two little girls. He's going to be at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and I'm planning on moving there to be with my two little babies. And I'm really proud of my son. We just had a fantasy camp baseball in Mobile, Alabama, at Hank Aaron Stadium. We had 43 guys, three boys prayed to take Jesus into their lives. So I preached the gospel. And the gospel is that Jesus Christ died on the cross, shed his blood for all people, all the sin of the world, and was buried and rose on the third day and ascended into heaven. If you believe that Jesus Christ is God and he's man, and he died on that cross, his blood was shed, you have faith by the grace of God and believe that you can be reborn again. And I have eternal life in Jesus. So that's what I preach. That's what I speak about. I speak about the hope and faith and by the grace of God that my life has been changed. Like I said, I was angry, bitter, hateful, mean, drunk, alcoholic. You know, I ask people sometimes, if I was laying in that hospital next to you and I was dying, and you looked over and you saw a man who was stinky, liar, thief, an alcoholic and drug addict, filthy, dirty, language was terrible, would you have told me and giving me hope through Jesus Christ, or would you let me just lay there and die? My thing is, I believe that right now there's a great harvest that we need to be about our business, about what the Lord has for us, to tell people about the hope of God and through the Lord Jesus Christ, that we can be adopted into the family, heirs, and have life eternally. And that hope is through Jesus Christ. I preach that the world needs Jesus.
Right. Well, that's obviously very, very powerful comments by you. And you said you were proud of your son. Well, you should be also proud of yourself, because you've done very well with your life. You've had impact on so many people. And I know I always enjoyed being around you, and I hope to be around you again soon. And like I said, it's a great story and one that we're going to work on getting out there even more, because like I said, it's a great story of a comeback. And we all, the Italians have a saying, you fall down six times, you rise seven, and you certainly have risen. And I know a lot of people need to hear your story, but we have something here called the Eric Jackson Lurie final word, Bernie. And for the final word for you, I'd like you to tell people, and you kind of touched on it, but how to deal with adversity. Right now, there's so many people out there suffering due to, you know, the pandemic and loss of jobs and loss of life, and they're confused and they're hurting. So with the Eric Jackson Lurie final word, give us your final word on advice on how to deal with adversity.
Well, I ask people to seek the truth, and get the word of God and sit down with the Bible and seek the truth yourself to find out. Start from Genesis to Revelation. You can read the New Testament, the Old Testament, and start reading and disciple yourself in the Word of God. Seek the Word. And I believe the truth will set you free. And I believe that the hope that we have is through Jesus Christ. I believe in God. I believe in the Holy Spirit. And I believe in the Lord. And my hope is in Christ. It's not in Bernie Carbo. It's you know, I'm living this life and just looking at the world and just praying without ceasing, and knowing that the Lord is in control and it's his glory. And I wake up every day and thank God for the breath that he puts in my lungs and that I can breathe today. I don't look back to yesterday, and don't look forward to tomorrow. I live this day that God has given me. He's given me breath, the hope to enjoy this day and have joy in this day and have an abundance of life, to understand I have a beautiful wife I'm living with and I love her. I have a day today that I can go out and run and play ball. Yesterday I was working with 24 kids at Hank Aaron Stadium. Today I was working with boys and girls at the hitting club. I tell you, I just feel today's the most important day of my life, and I want to live in the fullest in the hope and desire to live it as the way I should live it. And that is in just a joy that I have today to know that I'm alive. You know, I tell you, when I look back at the way I lived my life, there were many a night that I should have died. I should have died with an overdose of drugs. I fell asleep in Chicago between two cars, raining and pouring rain. Wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning in the gutter. I've laid in the water, a pool of water in a bathtub, thinking my heart was going to come out of my chest. But you know, God says, I don't want you to live in that. I want you to look back and see the greatness of your life, the love of your dad, your mother, and the friends and the people that have been in my life. Look at the greatest game. Look at the people I played with. Look at the home runs. Look at the people I knew. And look back and enjoy my life as God lets me see the goodness of my life. You know, not to dwell on the negative, but to dwell on the things that were so beautiful in my life. My children, my grandchildren, my son, and people I met through the game of baseball and the things. Even today, I mean, Topps Bubblegum has given me 1,500 cards assigned to be out there, and that's a great thing. I mean, who would have think at 72 years old right. that I would still be playing and enjoying the game of baseball and having so much fun? I love my life, and we just got to take one day at a time and just enjoy this day. And the Serenity Prayer is, deal with what you can deal with. What you can't deal with, give it to God.
Well, Bernie, I really appreciate you being on the show. You have opened up your heart and given people your heart. And I appreciate that. And I know you've touched a lot of people. And I know the fans of the show are really appreciative of the things that you said. And I know I am. And it's been an honor to know you and call you a friend. And unfortunately, we haven't seen each other in a while, but hopefully that'll change. And I know James talks about you all the time. We both talk about you all the time. And as I said, it was definitely an honor to have you on the show. And thank you. Thank you for your words, too.
Well, I love you, son. I love you very much.
And, love you too, brother. Thank you.
Yeah, and anytime I can come on the show, I'd love to. So You have a great day. Love your wife and your children. Enjoy this day to the fullest. And thank you so much for having me on the show.
And I got to say one more thing. In 2004, 2003 and 4, when my dad was sick and he passed away in 2004, you called me a couple times a week to check on me. And you spoke to my dad. You spoke to me all the time. And I always appreciated that. And again, that just goes to show you what kind of person you are. And we'll definitely have you back on the show. And again, thank you for everything.
Thank you. And you have a great night. And thank you very much, man. I love you, buddy.
Love you too, brother. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that. That was, again, that was very important stuff that Bernie said. And he truly is a great guy and a great story. He has a book out that he said, Saving Bernie Carbo. So make sure you look that up and try to get it. And we will definitely have him on the show again for sure. As always, want to thank our sponsors, Roscoe Hearing and Allergy Care Center, Aspire Pediatric Therapy, Dom's Pizzeria and Sports Bar, 502 Cavett Avenue in Trafford, Pennsylvania. Call Dom at 412-372-3667. And criminal defense attorney Eric Jackson Lurie with offices located in downtown Pittsburgh. And Fox Chapel, call Eric at 412-963-9308. As always, thank Rick Mitchell and Adam Zaloof, my great producer. We have some great guests coming up. I just found out today that we're going to have Shea Hillenbrand, the former Boston Red Sox All-Star, that's going to be on the show pretty soon. We'll have Quaker Valley head basketball coach and athletic director Mike Mastriani trying to get finalized Mark Merrow, the wrestling champion. We'll get him on soon as well. So we have a bunch of great guests. And as always, thank you to the fans of the show. You can listen to the show on ClaudioRalsano.com, Spotify, Stitcher, and iTunes. And as always, thank you, Mom and Pop. Okay, everybody, talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Claudio Ralsano Show, brought to you by Aspire Pediatric Therapy and Roscoe Hearing and Allergy Care Center. Be sure to tune in next time on ClaudioRalsano.com.
Spring is here and so are spring allergies.
Are you experiencing headaches, fatigue, nasal congestion, itchy watery eyes, ear pressure, or vertigo? You may have spring and summer allergies. We can help at the Roscoe Allergy Center in Dubois. We'll diagnose, treat, and get you feeling better. Allergy therapy could help eliminate these symptoms and avoid the hassles of daily medications, as well as the side effects that go along with them. We can help at the Roscoe Allergy Center.
Modern solutions with the care you've been looking for. Call Dr. Roscoe's office today, 814-375-0455.
Has your child been diagnosed with an autism spectrum or developmental issue? You're not alone. Aspire Pediatric Therapy has been helping families for over 10 years and has three convenient locations. Through love, laughter, and play, the Aspire team provides occupational speech and feeding therapy using the area's only state-of-the-art sensory motor gyms. Aspire will treat you and your family like family. Don't settle for less. Call 412-474-3566 or check them out on the web at aspirepediatrictherapy.com.
We want to welcome our newest sponsor, Dom's Pizzeria and Sports Bar, 502 Cavett Avenue in Trafford, Pennsylvania. Call 412-372-3667. Don Pecora, great guy, great food. Make sure you tell him we sent you.